On Wednesday, President Donald Trump said on Fox and Friends that seeing professional athletes kneel during the national anthem causes him to turn off the game. Last night, LeBron James was asked for his response. Take a listen.
I really don't think the basketball community are sad about losing his viewership. The game will go on without his eyes on it. I can sit here and speak for all of us that love the game of basketball. We could care less.
Well, LeBron is accurate on that because I can tell you ratings are up 14% already, and we haven't even gotten into playoffs. Okay, Kendrick Perkins back here with us. Neek, I'll start with you, and I want to be fair to LeBron here. So LeBron was asked about our President Trump, and he responded. So should he continue to comment on Trump when he's asked about it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that one thing that LeBron does is he creates a paradigm that I think is safe for other athletes to speak out. I think anyone in any walk of life or any profession has the right to talk about and criticize and even celebrate whatever leaders that they have in that situation. So I think LeBron, while athletes, there's more expected in some cases, also sometimes there's a little bit extra criticism. So if he's a citizen of this country, even if he's not a citizen of this country, one of the things about this country is we believe that people have the freedom to speak. And I think one of the arguments maybe against him doing it is that you think that it might hurt the result that LeBron so clearly wants is a Democrat to win the White House. I don't think that's true. I think we're at a point now where people are pretty entrenched in where they want to be. If what Donald Trump has said and done up until this point hasn't swayed anybody, LeBron James saying something is not going to sway them one way or the other. And I think this is not new for LeBron. He was openly campaigning for Hillary Clinton in Ohio back in 2016. They ended up losing Ohio to Donald Trump, though Cleveland went heavy for Hillary Clinton. I think that he is free to say the things that he wants to say. I'm happy that he's saying them, and I encourage him to keep saying them, whether he's asked or not asked.
And I agree with you, Dominique. You're speaking the gospel. Listen, I keep telling people it's a difference between being popular and powerful. And LeBron James is powerful. He's one of the most powerful people in America. Well, probably in the world when you think about it, right? His following, his support is just right up there with Trump's. So, yes, I think he should respond every time Trump says something. And by the way, we already know that Trump is a hater of the NBA. He don't like the NBA. Are we really shocked that he said this? No. Does he really watch the NBA? Does he watch basketball? Listen, hell no. He don't watch basketball. And we all know this, right? This is the problem that I have. He's been very critical of the NBA throughout this whole time that he's been in office. You look down the line, he always criticized and ripped the great Greg Popovich. He ripped Steve Kerr. He always got something to say towards LeBron. He always got something negative to say towards the NBA in general. It's never nothing positive. And now you take and consider, now you look at another situation right during this pandemic with Dana White and the UFC, and I think they have done a great job. Don't get me wrong. They have done a great job during this pandemic for us, you know, having the UFC fights in their format or whatever the case may be. But you hear Donald Trump, he says positive things about them. Oh, yeah, the UFC has done a wonderful job. Way to stand on the front line. Well, the NBA has done a great job also in returning to playing, resuming the season and playing in the bubble, having zero cases. Players are playing at an extremely high level. Like you said, Molly, the ratings are up. Donald Trump haven't said anything positive about that. But right. The one thing that he could point out is something negative. And it's always a negative response when it comes from him about the NBA. And by the way, it's always that negative response because guess what? By the way, the NBA is made up of 80% African Americans. So more than a vote, that campaign, more than a vote, I'm saying it right now.
I think the only argument against LeBron responding to these types of things is that it takes the attention off of the more important things. And that's probably what the president is trying to create, a moment where we're not looking at how poorly this country has handled the coronavirus, a moment when we aren't looking at the situation that we're in now, a moment when we're not looking at we have to be in a bubble in college football and professional football is in limbo and baseball is in limbo because the country has not responded well to this virus. Harris. The only thing I would suggest to LeBron is just because his name is brought up to you in a particular context is you don't have to talk about that, because I do believe that we've seen throughout this this administration, a lot of what they do is point in a different direction. They give us something to talk about. They give us some front page headlines so that we aren't necessarily focused on the things that are very important. Like, if we want to sit here and debate the ratings of basketball, like, that to me seems like a nonsense exercise. I do think that it's fair and smart to point out that the ratings are doing better, but the numbers that we need to be looking at is the rise in COVID-19 cases and the numbers of deaths per capita that we have in this country compared to other countries. Those are the numbers that LeBron James should point us to, and frankly, those are the numbers that the president should be focused on, not necessarily focused on the ratings or the scores of some sort of game. So if I give any advice to LeBron James, and he's handled all of his business well up until this point, the only advice I would give to him is not to be quiet when they ask you about it, but to point the attention of our country and the attention of the media and the attention of your fans to the things that matter. And the things that don't matter are the ratings of the NBA. The things that do matter is the fact that we got hot spots all over this country when the president said it was going to go away in April when the weather got hot.
Well, also, I think LeBron does a great job of preaching, going out to vote. I think right. He does an excellent job of saying justice for Breonna Taylor. He does it every time he get a chance to speak about it. And he started the More Than a Vote campaign. So I think he do have to address these issues. And you're right, Dominique, about the ratings. But he's also right about the NBA could care less if Donald Trump watches the game. The ratings are up. That's the point that I was making. I'm not saying let's not be distracted, because, you know, that's part of the voting process is distractions, the intimidation, and misinformation. And we can't get distracted from that part of it. So you're right at that aspect. But I was just, you know, going back to Molly's point, where she said the ratings are high, so we won't miss him watching the game anyway. It's not like he watch it anyway.
Yeah. And I think this last thing I'll just say quickly, if you truly want our country to win, I don't know how you could not support the NBA, how they've handled COVID with the bubble situation. Just for us, American citizens dealing with a pandemic, it's a positive distraction. In terms of these players, they're helping the economy with all the money that they're making. And just how about the simple fact that they're inspiring us to be better at our craft? I mean, I could go on and on with a laundry list of what the NBA has done and continues to do for our country and globally. In the NFL, Antonio Brown is still a free agent after being suspended for 8 games by the NFL earlier this week. That has team officials talking about where he might go, including one scout who talked to our Rob Domofsky.
One veteran scout, a guy who's been around a long, long time, worked for a number of teams, said this, and I want to read this to you. He said, "They're back to square one. It's the same guys as last year. If I was them, I'd go sign Antonio Brown. You use him for 1 year. Let's say Aaron has 2 great years left in him. I'm going to go for it. I'm not sure why they won't."
Well, they surely didn't go for it in terms of Aaron Rodgers in the draft when they took Jordan Love. But I like where Rob's sentiment is there. RC back here with us. Neek, I'll start with you. Do you think the Packers should sign AB?
Let me go back in history a little bit. There was a time when AB was with the Steelers. Oh, yeah, keep us all up here. I want RC to be here to see this. Time when AB was with the Steelers and AB was having issues with the team, and people were all over AB for quitting on the team, and Ben Roethlisberger didn't like him, and people were complaining. And I remember going on a television show and being on that television show with a young man named Ryan Clark. And I said, "We got to give AB the benefit of the doubt." And I said that Ben Roethlisberger is no saint. We can't assume that AB is the problem. It could be a tough situation. And I said, "AB is so talented, you better figure out a way to work it out." I said all that. And then RC was like, "I played with AB. AB will tell you what he wants to hear. AB is not mature. AB is a problem." And I was like, "Ryan, you wrong. You don't understand, Ryan Clark. You wrong. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt." And then AB went on to the Raiders, blew that situation up, went on to the Patriots. That situation didn't work out necessarily. And then I'm like, man, I should have listened to that wise brother Ryan Clark. And now I say, no, they should not go get him. And now, Ryan Clark, what do you have to say to that? Of course they should not go get him because he's unreliable, because he's immature, because he's somebody who you cannot depend on. These are things that a man who played with him once told me. So, Ryan, how do you feel today?
I feel like you're wrong, Dom. I feel like that you should have been with me then. And so if you were with me then, I want you to be with me now. This okay. is not a thing where the Packers should kick the tires on AB. This is not a thing where the Packers should put out some feelers. The Packers have to get Antonio Brown signed. They need Antonio Brown on this team. They even need Antonio Brown in this locker room. And not because he's going to make it a better locker room, but because if you don't have him in the locker room, you can't have him on the grass because he's not on your team. And if you want to – listen – one of my favorite shows is Quantum Leap. And in Quantum Leap, they got a guy named Sam Beckett, and he walk around with this dude named Al. Nobody else could see Al. Al's a hologram. But Sam Beckett used to go back in the past and put right what once went wrong. That was the tagline. That's what the Packers have to do, because Molly mentioned it. They didn't go out and help and Aaron Rodgers in the draft. They didn't get one of these wide receivers when 34 of them were picked. Well, now you got a chance to get a dude that's better than all of them. And, oh, you can get him and not owe him anything, not guarantee him anything, not strap your organization down because you got to give him big money, because he has to prove that he can even stay available. So, but what you know is, if Antonio Brown is on the field, it is very, very likely that he's the best player out there. And now you add him to a top 10 receiver, a true number one receiver in Devontae Adams. And then you have Aaron Jones in the backfield. You go out and get a compliment in the second round as a power back from Boston College. And you got Aaron Rodgers, who is mad because instead of getting him some help in the first round, you went out and you got Jordan Love. Listen, I said it this morning. The only love that Aaron Rodgers probably wanted was Leon Lonnie love, right? Because what he did? Because when he saw Mama Payne in the church, he sent blessings at a long distance, and it was coming at her underhand. That's the only love that he wanted to see. Now, if you get Antonio Brown, this team is immediately better, Dom. Immediately better. And if he messes up, send him home.
You're trying to win me over with your references that only me, you, and like 10% of our audience get. You know how much I love that. Because now you got people out here Googling Reverend Lonnie Love, and they are going to be pleasantly surprised. However, I agree with you. AB is nasty. He's a great player. But the assumption that he's going to come in and make everything better is only assuming that he only shows up on game day. He is in that locker room, and he is also in the community making the decisions that AB makes. And you're making all these leaps based on the assumption that AB is in a situation where he realizes that he does not have much leverage, and that's going to force him to behave rationally in this situation. I obviously am not a doctor. So I'm not going to extend any sort of diagnosis or analysis. All I'm going to do is base it on the track record that I've seen. It seems like he has a difficult time consistently making the right decisions. You bring him into that locker room, I'm not a guy who believes in distractions necessarily. I don't think he's going to break up the locker room by distraction, but I do know that what happened with the Patriots, one of the things that happened was AB went too far. AB's potential punishment became a problem. The Patriots organization wanted to move on from him, and the quarterback and some of the players did not. That created a rift in one of the best run organizations we have in this league. The idea that you don't think a similar thing could happen in Green Bay is foolish to me. I think that is dangerous. You are giving, whether you're giving him a lot of money or not, you're giving him a great deal of power and influence in your locker room. I don't think it's as easy as you think. Whatever mess that he creates, which we all have to agree that it's at least a 50-50 chance that he's going to create a mess. Whatever mess he creates, you do not get rid of just because you got rid of him.
Hey, you know I watched The Last Dance in between all commercials and all segments, right? Right. Yeah. And listen, it's maybe a 10% chance that AB doesn't, that AB doesn't mess this up, that AB does the right thing, right? And so, but I remember, you know, Michael Jordan, he was talking about 9 out of 10, and they said, you know, like 9 times, like you could get a, like this, it might cure you, or like the other time, you get a freaking, like you could die, right?
With
and what
injury,
Mike said,
right?
It depends on how effing bad the headache is. And listen, when you look at Antonio Brown, bro, it's just worth it. Matt LaFleur, not a great coach. Matt LaFleur, not inspiring when he speaks. Matt LaFleur, not changing offense and making it innovative in Green Bay. Just turn around, hand it to Aaron Jones. If we want to win, Aaron Rodgers, you just make a good throw. It was the Aaron offense. That's what it was. But when you get AB, it changes things. The other thing we do know is without AB, they get stumped out in the NFC Championship anyway. Without AB this year, I don't think they even win the NFC North because I believe the Minnesota Vikings do. And so you've messed it up, and you've messed it up royally anyway. Like, this is over. Aaron Rodgers ain't gonna win the Super Bowl with this team the way it's constructed. Matt LaFleur ain't gonna be no coach no more. And eventually Jordan Love gonna be the quarterback with a new coach. So why not try it? Why not just say, man, we're gonna get one of the best wide receivers that's ever lived. And if
because
he blows
I'll tell
up
you
the
why.
Entire locker room, guess what? It was going to blow up anyway. Anyway, it was boom. It was over.
You don't try it. You don't try it.
The 10% of great.
Okay, that's fine. I understand risk reward, but you don't try it because a very wise man whom I love and trust told me that this guy is unreliable. You need reliable people on your team if you're going to win. That wise man told me, do not trust him. And now, man, all of a sudden, he talked about trust him. It makes me nervous. It makes me nervous. And I don't think that
Dominique,
their problem. Oh, one last thing. Their problem in the NFC Championship game was Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers just had to turn around and hand the ball off. And they got 12 yards of pop. If AB can't play three tech, if AB can't rush off the edge, if AB can't be the extra safety in the box, AB ain't going to fix the problem that they had in that game. If AB is going to get in the box and fit up, if he's going to shed some blocks and get in the backfield, then maybe it's worth the risk.
At least then the score is 42-38, right? At least we don't get blown out by 4 touchdowns in AB's play. I think it's worth the risk. I think it's worth trying to mend the relationship with Aaron Rodgers and say, man, right, we mucked it up.
Yeah.
But look, right now, we're going to give you a chance in these last 2 years to win it. And if AB messes up, send him home.
I want him to have
listen
the chance.
Listen to me now. Listen
I
to
want
me
him
now,
to have
dog.
The chance. I just don't
now.
Believe.
I wore Ravens colors. Listen to me now.
Okay, all right. All right.
Ravens colors.
I'm with you. You won this debate. Sign AB Green Bay. Go ahead. Sign him. Good luck.
All right. Full disclosure, guys. I didn't Google Reverend Leon Lonnie Love. I like the Martin reference, but I did Google Quantum Leap. How did I not know about that show?
Quantum,
you're not that much
like
older
Quantum
than
Leap?
Me.
Oh, Quantum Leap was a classic.
Phenomenal. I swear, I never watched Quantum Leap. I didn't even know about Quantum Leap.
Oh, it was
so
on,
I don't know. I'll
it
get
was
my
on
life together.
Prime time, and then it was on in reruns at midday after school.
You might be too young, though, Molly.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably it.
Might be a little old for you.
They used
all
to
right.
go back and
we'll
write
leave
all
it on
the
that
wrongs.
Note.
He was black in one episode.
Back with
remember
us in
that?
A little bit. Oh my God. Meanwhile, Nuggets rookie Michael Porter scored 30 points, grabbed 15 boards. He had 5 3-pointers, the first rookie to ever do that in a game as the Nuggets took down the Spurs 132-126. Jokic scored 25. He dished out 11 assists as Denver pulled within a half game of the Clippers for second in the West. Pop with high praise for the Joker afterwards.
Porter's, you know, he's a fine young talent. And, you know, Jokic, he's like a reincarnation of Larry Bird. He does everything. He's amazing. They were great.
Reincarnation of Larry Bird. That is impressive. Meanwhile, KD picked his champion on the Play for Keeps podcast saying, quote, if I had to choose, and I hate doing that because you never know what can happen. You've seen that with us last year. But if I had to choose, I will go with the Clippers and the Bucks for the chip. And I'll go with the Clippers. Perk back here with us. Perk, I'll start with you. So I ask you, tell me this. Who's the biggest threat to these LA teams?
It's the Houston Rockets, the one team that have two former MVPs still in their prime. At all times, the Houston Rockets have an MVP on the court. They're my dark horse contender. The only reason that I don't have them picked to win it all over the Lakers is because history tells us that you need a rim protector and you need a center. Now, they have a unique style where they space the floor, and if they do win the championship, it will be the first time ever that a team has won a championship without a defense, without a center in the middle to anchor the defense and a rim protector. But when I'm looking at this Houston Rockets team, they are very dangerous. They score at a tremendous rate. They could put up buckets and they could put up 15 to 20 points in 2 minutes. James Harden is on the tear. I love what he's doing defensively right now. He's taking on the challenge. That 20 pounds look that he lost during the pandemic is showing. And then, you know, during this offseason, what Daryl Morey did was he already had a Rolls Royce in the Houston Rockets. He backed that Rolls Royce out one day, seeing that the service light came on. Instead of going to get an oil change, he went down there and put a whole new engine, a Ferrari engine, in Russell Westbrook. He brings that Mamba mentality to that team and is rubbing off on James Harden. And like I said before, the only reason that I'm giving a slight edge to the Lakers is because they have rim protection. And history shows us that no team has won the NBA championship without having a big man that could protect the basket.
So as a championship big man, I got to give you some credit for being able to accept that the Rockets are a real legitimate threat, despite the fact that they're doing it without somebody like you, which you're right. You've needed in history. But I agree with you. I think the Rockets are special, and they do have a chance to make it out of this bubble with a championship. And they're probably one of the more, or they are the most threatening team, I think, to the LA teams, in part because of what I saw in that one game against the recent game against the Bucks. And I understand we don't want to overplay how important one particular game is, but they've done this to a lot of people where teams are uncomfortable at end of game situations. We watched the Bucks take out the Lopez, and then that didn't work. Then they put him back in. We watched the Bucks try to post him up, Robin Lopez up, to pass the ball to him and run their offense through Robin Lopez. He made a couple baskets, he missed a couple baskets, but that's not what they want to do. You got teams uncomfortable and trying to go for shots that are going to get them 2 points when the Rockets are going down the other end, making shots that'll give them three. The math is in their favor, and I think that Russell Westbrook right now, this might be the best version that we've seen. Like, he fits in this offense, this position that he's playing now, if you can even call it
yes.
that. He fits in this offense better than he even fit when he was the MVP, when they were just throwing him the ball and clearing out so he could get rebounds and just letting him go to work. Like, he is more well-positioned here to do the things that he does best and let James Harden handle the ISO situations and handle the ball at the top of the key and make a lot more decisions. Russell is more better, he's better situated now than he was then. I think this is the best version we've seen, and that team is scary. But I do think that the Nuggets, the team that Popovich was talking about and saying that the Joker is somewhat like Larry Bird, I'm not a basketball historian enough to say whether that's true or false. It sounds a bit like hyperbole to me, but I do like the Nuggets in that situation. And I'm a big Bol Bol fan, personally. I know he's not the guy there, but I just want Bol Bol with the rock at the top of the key. That always looks beautiful with him handling the ball and passing the way he can.
Burke, let me ask you this. You heard with the KD comment.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Molly. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically what I was just going to say, we heard with KD, he's going Bucks and Clippers. Tell me this, because we got into a little bit earlier. What are your concerns with the Bucks? What are your concerns with the Clippers moving forward?
Go ahead, Burke.
Well, with the Bucks, I mean, we saw this movie before, where they dominate the regular season and flop in the playoffs. Listen, we know what Giannis is going to bring to the table. I don't know what Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton are going to do, because they have a history of disappearing in the playoffs. And you know that, and we all know that, in order to win a championship, you have to have a Batman and you have to have a Robin. You have to have that guy that's going to step up. Last year in the playoffs, Eric Bledsoe, he didn't step up. They had to play George Hill in those minutes. Chris Middleton, he had a couple horrible games in the playoffs last year. So until the Bucks prove me wrong, I can't believe in them, because we've seen this over the past 2 years where they have dominated the regular season and flopped in the playoffs. And when I look at the Clippers, listen, the Clippers are well coached by Doc Rivers, Ty Lue, Sam Cassell. That's my Celtic family for life, and I get it, right? But right now, I think it's a such thing of having too much firepower, meaning it's only one basketball. So my thing is, somebody's going to have to sacrifice. Everybody's not going to be able to put up 20 shots. Everybody's not going to be able to get 15 shots. Who's going to take a back seat? Who's going to take a back seat for us not getting the minutes that they think they deserve? It's easier said, but you have to do it. And I don't know. The Clippers have to prove that to me. And by the way, in the bubble, they haven't had their full roster yet. Lou Will just got implemented last game. Montrezl Harrell have yet to return. So they still have some rotational problems that they have to address. But when I look at the Rockets, I have to give some credit to their role players. Ben McLemore has been playing tremendous basketball. By the way, Austin Rivers has been playing great. He's been playing great basketball, and I want to give him credit right now because a lot of people was talking about, oh, he's just in the NBA because of his daddy. No, he's in the NBA because that kid could flat-out play. He could flat-out play, period, point blank. So I want to make that emphasis about Austin. And then the Rockets are playing good, and they're missing Eric Gordon right now.
Yeah,
they're missing Eric Gordon.
I think your point about the Clippers is true about them not necessarily having their roles figured out, because even before we went in the bubble, they weren't having all their players play all the time. Now they have guys coming in and out, and they don't necessarily fit together perfectly. I think that's one thing. Even though the Lakers don't have as much talent over throughout the roster as the Clippers, the Lakers do have a clear kind of situation where they know that it feels like AD is going to do the load of scoring and get them to the fourth quarter, in which LeBron James is going to beat LeBron James. Like, it feels like their roles, though their team is not perfectly built, their roles are defined. And about Molly's original question about the Bucks, the question with the Bucks, the thing that concerns you about the Bucks is what you saw at the end of that game against the Houston Rockets. It's an in-game situation, and it's going to happen a lot in the playoffs. You have a seven-game series. The opposing team knows all your sets. They know all your plays. They know all your tricks. At in-game situations, you're going to have to give the ball to your playmaker at the top of the key and let him make something happen. When Giannis, we saw at the end of that situation with James Harden, who's no one has ever accused of being a great defender, James Harden stopped him a couple times. And again, I understand how it's unfair to say it just based on one game, but Giannis has a track record, and that's something that comes up a lot. Is Giannis, because of his inability to shoot with range, it's hard to rely on him to close games and in-game situations. So that's the question for the Bucks. Obviously, they're talented enough to overcome it, but I think those are the questions for those remaining teams.
Hey, Dominique, you sure basketball wasn't your first love? Because the way you preaching today, brother, I'm like, man, hold on. You must have really loved basketball at heart and just fell into football during your career.
I had to. I was 5'11". I grew up in Baltimore. Trust me, I wanted to play basketball, but then I realized that was going to work out. So I had to figure out how to hit people to get this money. I wish I could have played basketball. It would have been a lot more fun, but I'm 5'11", and I can't handle like Chris Paul. So this is what you got to do. You got to learn how to backpedal. Perk, if you didn't have no ball skills, you'd have been playing nose tackle. So it's lucky you can handle that thing a little bit better than the rest of us.
Nah, defensive end and tight end. No, don't get it twisted.
Okay.
I got these hands.
Randy Scott, thank you kindly. All right, a former teammate of Cam Newton that played for Bill Belichick says there is a cause for concern in New England for the former NFL MVP. Free agent center Kyle Love said the following to the Boston Herald. I will read you the quotes. This is just my opinion, but I don't feel like Cam can take the pressure of coaches talking down about his play. If he had a bad game in Carolina, the coaching staff wouldn't say much to him because they may have felt he could be a little frail about it or maybe pout. They never really corrected to the point Bill used to correct Tom. My fear is Cam can fit in their box because I want Cam to win. I just hope he can do that within the guidelines of what Bill wants. Ryan Clark back here with us. Dominique, let me ask you this. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the show in terms of Cam fitting, but based on those comments, is that an indictment on Ron Rivera and what type of coach he was?
I mean, I think anyone who's been in the NFL locker room and probably any locker room understands something that one of my college coaches said to me a while ago is, I'm not going to treat you all equally, but I'm going to treat you fairly, which means that some people deserve and have earned a different level of treatment. And that's the way that it is. So I think that what Ron Rivera or whatever those coaches were doing down there was probably out of reaction to what Cam Newton has done. And Bill Belichick has done things differently, obviously, and you can't argue with his results. But he seems like a one of one, honestly, because there is every situation I've ever been through in coaching in my entire life as a player I've seen in my entire life is the coaches treat certain players a little differently. It's not even about being a star necessarily. It's just about what you've given to that team and you've earned some credibility. The same way I would treat somebody in my family differently than I would treat a stranger because I know a little bit more about them. I know how to respect them and understand. And RC, you played football longer than I have. I don't know. Have you been on teams where everybody, no matter what they have done, they just get all treated equally?
No, absolutely not. And I think you can look at Bill Belichick and see that he treats people differently. The love in his voice on Stephon Gilmore's highlight tape doesn't say that dude is treating badly. It says that he thinks he's a guy that goes out there and straps, and he's thinking love Stephon Gilmore, so he treats him that way. I played for Nick Saban in college, and it was his first 2 years before he really became the Nick Saban we know now. And I was the only dude that knew the defense. I would make every check in the walkthroughs when people would move around. We're doing the chair drill. The coaches, all the defensive players would look at me anytime somebody moved. And then I remember the whole season, though, he dogged me and he cussed me and he would always scream at me. And finally, it came to a head, headed to the bowl game where I took my shoulder pads off and I was leaving. And so I ended up having a meeting with him and my mom, and we're sitting in there and we're talking. And I ask him, I say, Coach, like, I'm always doing whatever you ask me. I work hard. I do all these things. I make all the checks. And for being late on the check, you treat me that way. I said, but all season you've cussed me and dogged me. And he said, that's because I knew you could handle it. He's like, that's because I knew you, I could coach you that way. And then other people who I couldn't coach that way would receive it and understand it better, but be able to function in their own worlds because they couldn't do what you did. And I think that's the sign of good coaching. And so if we're going to take this as an indictment on Ron Rivera's coaching, if he did recognize Cam needed to be treated and handled a certain way in order for him to be his best, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because when you have players that you select number one overall, when you have players who produce from their rookie year being the rookie of the year, also at some point becoming the MVP and playing at a high level until he started to get injured, wouldn't that tell you that Ron Rivera's handling of Cam Newton was right? That he got you to a Super Bowl, that you were 15-1? Wasn't it done the right way? And so, no, it's not an indictment on him in a negative way. It's saying that Ron Rivera coached Cam Newton in the way he had earned to be coached because of his play.
Yeah, and I think that we often talk about coaches being able to fit pieces into their offense or into their defense. The good coaches build offenses and defenses around the players that they have. And I think the same thing extends to the way that you treat players, the way that you talk to players, and the way that you cultivate a culture on a team. And I think you could say that Bill Belichick treats everybody the same because he cusses everybody out. But we saw what happened when Jared Stidham got in a game last year and threw a pick six. He pulled him right out the game. You know who he wasn't going to do that to? Tom Brady, because Tom Brady earned some benefit of the doubt. So suggesting that everyone gets treated the exact same way, I think is probably not true. Everyone might get coached hard. That's probably true. And I think that most guys who are at the NFL level, they've been coached hard at some point in their life, and they know how to handle it. Like Ryan Clark just told you that story. That story is something that you could hear from just about every player in the league. At some point, they had that particular position coach or head coach who got in them all the time about stuff that they didn't think that they deserve. You find a way to get around it. You find a way to work through it. So I think that it's incumbent on the players to understand how to fit in this situation, but the real job is on the coaches to understand how to do what is best for the people around you. And I think that's true of head coaches. Yeah. That's true of managers at companies. That's true of executives. And frankly, that's true of employees up to their executives. You know which boss you can say certain things to and which boss you have to do things to. It's called being a human being and understanding how interpersonal relationships impact your team. So I think that trying to indict Ron Rivera over this seems unfair. Maybe another coach could have gotten more out of Cam Newton than Ron Rivera. But I think that just because you watch Bill Belichick yell at somebody doesn't mean that's the right way to coach anyone else. I personally don't think that everyone responds well to that. Maybe Tom Brady does. Maybe Cam Newton does. Maybe he doesn't. I don't think that Kyle Love knows whether Cam Newton is capable of handling that type of coaching or not. If you hear Cam Newton's story, you talk about his father. From the time Cam Newton was a little boy, his father coached him very hard. And maybe he's willing to take a little bit more from his father than any other coaches, but I do think that it's not new to him. This is not going to be the first time that Cam Newton Bill yelled that. I promise you that. Cecil Newton definitely yelled at Cam Newton when he was a kid, if you know anything about Cecil Newton.
Moral of the story is we all got to be chameleons, and it can get exhausting. Absolutely. Ryan, let me ask you this, because we heard from
chameleons
your former
like
coach.
Chameleons like Sam from Quantum Leap. Sorry, Molly.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go again. All right, Big Ben was all sorts of banged up, right, you know, dealing with the elbow injury. So Mike Tomlin spoke about him. Big Ben does say that he's feeling better, though. Let me play that sound for you now.
I'm extremely comfortable with where he is in the process. It's been great communication from and through him and the medical professionals. I did watch him throw. You know, I didn't see anything that was alarming in any way. His velocity is excellent. Maybe his spiral could be a little tighter. I've seen it tighter, but nothing to alarm you in any way.
All right, Rye, tell me this. So no one's been really talking too much about your Steelers. Should they be in the conversation for Super Bowl contenders now that they got Big Ben back? And we saw what they did last year with a third-string quarterback and how that defense progressed.
Absolutely. I believe when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens, they are a cut above everyone else. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, to me, would be the team that starts off the conversation with the rest of the AFC. And let me be a little bit of a translator here for you guys, because, you know, Coach T, he doesn't really give you a lot. He kind of talks in cliches, and he doesn't really give you a window into his soul, but he said he's going to do his best to communicate this year. When Coach T says things like, I'm extremely comfortable, do you know what that means? That means it's going freaking excellent. That's what extremely comfortable means in Mike Tomlin talk. It is going excellent. When he says his velocity is excellent, you know what that means? That the football is whistling through the air. Because Coach T don't say that. Like, he don't just throw out compliments in
what
the
about
public
that spiral,
like
though?
That, right? So when we hear those, he's been throwing ducks since been. So we not tripping on that. Peyton Manning ain't never thrown no spirals, Dominique.
That's fair. I'm just saying MVPs. That Mike T, that Coach T brought that up also. All right, I appreciate your translation.
That means, listen, the negative is always the negative. It's the positive you got to decipher. You understand? He not going to bring the negative, but he going to bring the negative the right way. But it's the positive that he's kind of shaky on giving out in public. So when I hear these things about Big Ben, and you look at what they were able to do last year with a quarterback named Duck and one named Mason, right, that I don't even know why they're still on the team. God bless their hearts, though. When you look at that team being 8-8, the Minka Fitzpatrick trade, which ended up being a very intelligent trade, the way he was able to turn the ball over, become an All-Pro. T.J. Watt, who I believe had an opportunity to be Defensive Player of the Year. I believe he finished third. Also, Cam Hayward, a starter in the middle. This team is stacked defensively. When the Pittsburgh Steelers win, it's because they dominate on the defensive side of the ball. And in Ben's two championships and two Super Bowls, he made the needed plays to win big games. He could still do that with Juju and Johnson and Washington, Connor. This team is going to be a very tough out this year. I do believe that Lamar and Patrick and the Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs are the cream of the crop in the AFC. But you're talking about a team with championship medal, championship experience, a Super Bowl winning head coach, and a Super Bowl winning quarterback with a defense that flat gets after the other team. And so I think this team has a chance. I think that this team will grow as the season moves along, and we know that they will not fold, because without Big Ben last year, they found ways to win games and be in it at the end of the season. The Pittsburgh Steelers are a team you have to watch out for this year.
You haven't said anything that I disagree with. I do think that it's hard to expect them to play as well on defense this year as they did last year, because it was outrageous what they did last year. It's going to be hard to expect that to come again, but maybe with a better offense, they'll get more rest and they'll be even better. But to suggest that the talent around Ben Roethlisberger is close to what he's accustomed to at his peak, I think is not true. And Ben Roethlisberger at 38, he's not Tom Brady. He hasn't been eating avocado ice cream and avoiding strawberries and doing all these other things. Like, Big Ben Roethlisberger is Big Ben Roethlisberger. Let's be honest about this. He has not been going about his career in a way to suggest he want to play till he's 45. At 38, coming off of a legitimate elbow injury, there's reason to believe that he may not, while he's throwing whistling spirals right now, his velocity is great, there is legitimate reason to believe that by the time you get to the end of the season, playoff time, them things ain't gonna be whistling no more. I do like them because of the continuity of that defense, and I like them because of Mike Tomlin and the stability of that organization. But while Ben Roethlisberger throwing with his left hand is probably an upgrade at quarterback, being an upgrade over the quarterbacks they had last year is not like we're introducing Johnny Unitas out there. Like, it's going to be a different Ben Roethlisberger. So I think it's unfair to expect him to be something special. They should be happy if they get slightly above league average.
But see, that's what's happening, right? Because we see Patrick Mahomes and we see Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson, and we start thinking, man, it's got to be special. But I've won a championship when it wasn't special on offense. I went to another Super Bowl when it wasn't special on offense, when you just did enough because your defense was that good. And even though I know you say it's hard to be consistently that great, look at those Ravens teams that you were around, or the Pittsburgh Steelers teams that went to 3 Super Bowls in 6 years. It was because of defense. And when you can do that and come into a stadium with an opportunity to win, when Coach Tomlin looks me in my eyes and says, RC, last year I was starting to get the feeling walking into the stadium that I had when y'all played. And he wasn't talking about the entire team, the entire 53. He was talking about the 11 dudes that walked out on defense and the dudes that replaced them when they needed a breather. When he said, when you walked into, I just knew we had to find a way to not mess it up offensively. And I believe with Big Ben and some of those weapons around him, they're going to find a way to not mess it up offensively. And if they make one or two plays when they need to, this team can find themselves in the Super Bowl in February. And I'm looking forward to watching it.
I mean, I agree like with that. You. That defense. Sorry, go ahead, Molly.
No, you're fine. I was just going to leave you with this. Listen, you guys have been holding it down here all morning. Get up 2 hours. First take 2 hours. So take your business on top, party on bottom, outfit wearing selves. And why don't you go have a nice lunch? Go get a sandwich, some chips. I don't know what you eat. Yup, see, we all got it. I'm not showing mine. All right, appreciate you guys. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye.